You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
Hello, Wisconsin. You've got the right spot. This is the Rational Revolution, and I am your host, Mark Becker. We're going to get right to it because this is a really exciting episode, and I'm so honored to have this guest here in studio. You're here.
I'm here.
We have Senator Tammy Baldwin with us.
Mark, it's so great to join you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It is. I am so honored to have you. I'm so excited to have this discussion. I think it's going to be really wonderful, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I always like to start the show, and we were talking a little off air about, an introduction of how you got into politics. And I read a little bit because you've got a Wikipedia page, you know.
Oh, yeah. Crowdsourced.
It's big time. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I read about your early life, and my goodness, you had to grow up really fast.
I did. You know, my mother was only 19 when I was born.
Yeah.
And had a lot of struggles in her life, and she moved back in with her parents. And it was actually my grandparents, my maternal grandparents, who raised me. But my mother was always present in my life, and I watched her struggles, and from a very tender age, I wanted to help her,
yeah,
right? And
right.
fix things.
Yeah, right.
But I was too young at that point to do that. But I kind of grew up wanting to do those sorts of things and make things better. And
yeah.
And so, observations as a child led me into a career of public service. But, the other thing that was a real influence in my young life was my own childhood illness. I had a serious childhood illness at 9 years old and was in a hospital for 3 months.
No kidding.
And my grandparents had health insurance, but discovered during my hospitalization that it didn't cover grandkids because I wasn't a legal dependent.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So they, let's find her insurance. And with urgency, they looked. And back then, there was no obligation on the part of health insurance companies right. to cover somebody with a pre-existing health condition. Yep. So back then, millions of Americans couldn't get insurance in the individual market because they had diabetes or a heart condition or cancer or asthma. Right. And me, even though I fully recovered from my illness, but I was a child with a pre-existing health condition. Yeah. So an actuarial risk, I'm
right.
sure.
Uh-huh.
But I wanted to fix it. And, my story is that at every level I've served, I've been able to make a little progress on that.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, you've really had to persevere through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You persevered. You were the valedictorian of your high school.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. You went to was a Smith College and then UW-Madison, go Bucky. And you were elected. We were talking about this off air, 24 years old to the Dane County. You were still in college.
I was still in law school.
Yeah.
While
you got elected.
I remember this very serious conversation with, in law school, in your first year, you have all these big lectures and then you have one small group discussion. And that professor became like my mentor and inspiration.
Yeah.
So I remember walking up to him and going, Professor, there's a vacancy on the county board and I'm thinking of running for the seat. And he looked at me very sternly and said, you would be an excellent lawyer if you applied yourself. Then there was a pause and then a twinkle in his eye. And he said, but if you're going to run for county board, you'll have my full support.
It
was one of those amazing moments where, he was telling me something I needed to listen to.
Yeah.
But he himself, as a youth, had interned in a U.S. Senate office.
No kidding.
And it was very much something that shaped him. And so he really understood that I wanted to try this out.
Oh, good for you. And that's awesome. And then you were House of Representatives for a long time, 14 years.
Yeah.
And then in the Senate.
Yes.
So you've been commuting to D.C. for a little bit of time.
I have.
Yeah.
I have some frequent flyer miles.
I bet you do.
My gosh.
Yeah.
So and it's really important to me when we're not in session to try to be home.
Yes.
I
know
so,
that. Yes, that's
so
true.
So I'm in the old days. I think senators would fly out to D.C. and take up residence there and come home for the summer recess or the Thanksgiving and Christmas. But you know, in this day and age with modern transportation, I think our constituents expect us to show up and listen to them. And that's what I do. And I think it's one of the things that's helped me be successful is just showing up and listening.
No, that's true. And I know my brother, we were talking a little bit about, he is a resident of DC. And so he lives there. He's an activist, and all that kind of stuff. And so I got to love the city and its beauty and its the weight that comes from there, you know. And as we're talking with Senator Tammy Baldwin, what is that feel like going to DC, not with you, but with the millions of people on your shoulders from Wisconsin, you know, and their hopes and dreams and all of that?
Yeah. You know, when you do take the time to listen to your constituents, you begin to understand the challenges they face, what struggles, what impediments there are for working people to achieve the middle class and prosper and get ahead. But also, you know, a state like Wisconsin, there's a bunch of other issues. I think about, I have this little alliteration that I use a lot to describe where I spend most of my time in doing the work that I'm doing, which is wellness, work, and water.
Oh, that's cool.
So wellness is this healthcare agenda and trying to bring costs down for people and making sure that people can access the wellness and healthcare that they need, that they can afford their medications. And we're making some real progress in those areas. Work is about bringing good paying jobs back and helping people find a path to those jobs. And water, we're on two Great Lakes. We have the mighty Mississippi. We have groundwater issues, and we have PFAS issues. We have lead laterals still in our water utilities, and we love our water for fishing and boating and, you know, oh my gosh. So all of those things are very Wisconsin to me. And then, you know, beyond that, I learn about different industries. We make things in Wisconsin, we have big manufacturing, but that plugs back into the work. You know, we've lost some of those jobs. We got to bring them back.
How do we do that?
Buy America rules.
All right, here we go.
Okay, here we go. You ready?
Absolutely.
So I've been fighting for Buy America rules. What does that mean? It means that when we're spending our taxpayer dollars, whatever possible, let's use them to support U.S. workers and U.S. small businesses, right? Let's not send our money overseas. And so when we're building our infrastructure, let's not source components from China or from India. Let's make them here. And so I have, like, who's against that? Well,
I was just saying, well, who would be
against that? Well, maybe these big behemoth global corporations and multinational corporations who want to make things in places where there's no worker safety rules, where there's no environmental protections, where there's forced labor. I mean, that still exists in this world. Or where the state subsidizes the industry so that they can undercut us and drive us out of business. Let's bring a halt to that. At least, I'm not telling the private sector what to do. I'm just saying with U.S. tax dollars. So I got permanent Buy America rules in the infrastructure bill that we passed several years ago. And I am seeing the results. We're building electric vehicle chargers in Wisconsin now.
No kidding.
We are, we have 200 new jobs in southeastern Wisconsin in Kenosha County, building circuitry for our broadband build out. In the Fox Valley, you know, I think so much of Nina Foundry. Are you strange like me? And when you go to a new city, you look down at the manhole covers.
Yes, I totally do.
Those are made in Wisconsin.
Yes.
So I do that. And anyways, I visited there and
That's
I just
funny.
Realized that, you know, India makes them cheaper. But with Buy America rules, we prefer to support U.S. jobs in our own backyard. And if those rules weren't in place, probably the municipal division of Nina Foundry might not exist.
There's a lot of people there.
It was a good union job. But that's how you bring the jobs back. I consider myself the Buy America champion of the Senate. And so
That's cool.
And it's one of the things, you don't usually pass a bill that just says, you know, Buy America. You attach Buy America rules to these other measures that are coming through. So, you know, I think of us here in Green Bay. I think about a little north of here in Marinette. We build ships for the Navy.
Yep.
We're talking about taxpayer dollars that support that operation. But there's all sorts of things you have to put into ships.
Yes.
That's where Buy America for the Navy says, let's source them in small businesses across Wisconsin, not overseas.
Right.
And so it has a big impact on our regional economy. And it's one of the ways that I'm fighting for jobs.
Yeah, it's huge. And, you know, with the amount that the federal government does spend and things from ships to chairs.
Yes.
You know, if that's a smart thing. And you would think that would be something we would have done a long time ago. What kind of pushback do you get with that?
Yeah. So I remember fighting, several years back, and we were doing what's called a Water Resources Development Act. So it's something we pass every 4 or 5 years. Sometimes we pass them every year. And it's for big water resource projects. And I was trying to get Buy America policies. I wanted permanent ones, but I was getting pushback. So the House version had zero Buy America rules. The Senate, we got a permanent one. And so we're compromising. And who was resisting it on behalf of the multinationals in the House? Paul Ryan. He was speaker at
the
time.
Really?
Yeah. It was like, okay, let's get a 5-year policy at least.
Right.
And nope. You know, I think we got maybe a 1-year Buy America rule in that. And then at sunset. And it was like, this is not enough. Plus, if you want to get new businesses into producing these components, you tell them you just have a 1-year window, they're not going to do it.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Or even 5 years. It's like, if I'm going to start making a new component, I want a signal that says the U.S. government's going to be buying this for a long period of time.
That's where companies will invest and reinvest if they know that this is happening.
And we found that during the pandemic. You know, remember the early days where nobody had masks?
Right.
Including nurses. They were like using a mask for a week and then washing them and using it another week.
Yeah.
I mean, this was crazy. We invented those sophisticated respirator masks and then they're made somewhere else.
That's crazy.
So, you know, we need to always figure out
how to
keep strong and safe.
Right. As we're talking with Tammy Baldwin, we're going to talk more on the other side. Stick around. This is going to be a good one. Thank you. Come. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. You got Mark Becker and Tammy Baldwin, Senator from the great state of Wisconsin. Oh my goodness. This is such an honor again. So I thank you so very much.
I'm so delighted.
Thank you.
This is fun.
It is. And, you know, my background, we were kind of talking about beforehand, you know, I was the Republican Party chairman and then, you know, had a lot of life experiences. And I look around and say, oh my gosh, well, this doesn't make a lot of sense. And I, you know, when I was elected to local office, I felt the weight of my community. When my wife and I had our child, my wife is a Black woman, and the child was going through some medical things, and the doctor walks in and says that child is going through withdrawals after he looks at my wife. And I see some of these experiences and see, you know, it was horrible. Oh my God, I could go an hour on that. That was awful. Oh. But I see the inequalities and I feel need in the community. There is so much uncertainty in our nation and in our politics. Breaking news right now, as we, about an hour ago, Adam Schiff called on Joe Biden to drop out of the race. Everywhere you go, I would imagine that you are being asked by voters, reporters, whoever, is Joe Biden the right person to defeat Donald Trump? I would love to hear your opinion on this.
Well, I can attest to that absolutely happening. Since the debate, again, I've been traveling the state. I was home for the 4th of July holiday.
Oh, yeah.
And we had planned to have, and did have, a great I Northwoods tour.
Oh,
so
nice. Yes.
I started in Superior.
Oh, right on. I saw that. Yes.
Yeah. I went.
That was cool.
I was in 2 4th of July parades, Ashland and Minocqua. I ended up in Marinette. I had a stops. You know, I live in Madison, so then we could make my way down.
That's
but
cool.
After every event, I had mix and mingle with the people who came for the event, the parade or the meet and greet or whatever it was, and serial conversations of people really, really concerned about the top of the ticket. Last week we were in session, and so I was out in Washington, D.C., and I had a chance to meet with the president's top advisors, both in the White House as well as on the campaign. And I just decided what I need to do is share what I'm hearing from my constituents with them. And while, you know, we've heard them resolutely say he's running, you know, and they have to say that.
They have to,
until he's not, right?
Right.
So they're, we're going to hear that. I wasn't alone. My colleagues also got a chance to share. Not everyone had the same perspective.
Yeah.
But I have to believe that they are weighing what they're hearing.
Oh, yeah.
Weighing that input. Good. And that there can be a course correction, right?
Right.
And so, you know, right now the nation's attention is on a convention here in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I can share that there's been a lot of hand-wringing. Mm-hmm. I will also tell you a quote that I heard from the governor from next door in Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer.
Yes.
She came to visit Wisconsin to
She's
boost
awesome.
My campaign, and we did a couple of events together. But she said to the crowd, you can't roll up your sleeves when you're wringing your hands, right?
That's true.
And I love that image because at some point, we have to refocus on the differences.
Yes.
Between what Republicans would have in store and things like, you know, the Project 2025 that's been drafted to start.
They're running away from it. Well, I don't know
the
what
dictator,
that is.
Yeah, the dictator on day one.
Right.
And the contrast between what Democrats have to offer.
Right.
And it couldn't be stronger.
Right.
And, you know, on the issues that are most important, weighing most on people's mind, the Democratic efforts are the ones that we need to embrace.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know where to start, but during 2 years ago, a U.S. Supreme Court that was largely put in place in terms of the majority by former President Trump with 3 appointees to the Supreme Court, they issued the Dobbs decision, taking away the rights and freedoms of half of America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, breaking a precedent that was nearly 50 years old.
Yeah.
And I am about restoring those rights and freedoms. In fact, I have the honor of being the lead author of a bill called the Women's Health Protection Act.
On behalf of my wife and my daughter. Thank you.
It would restore Roe versus Wade by codifying it. And then also tell states like Wisconsin and Texas and Florida and so many others, you can't just pass state laws to go around,
right?
You have to, you can't, you know, interfere with Roe versus Wade by passing state level laws.
Right.
So, you know, the contrast between my opponent and me and between Democrats and Republicans on that issue could not be stronger.
Right.
You know, we were just talking about, you know, the wellness work and water on wellness. We achieved a major breakthrough. Just 2 years ago in a bill called the Inflation Reduction Act in beginning to lower the price of prescription drugs.
Yeah.
And I had a victory so recently with regard to asthma inhalers.
Yes, thank you. I am on one.
Yes.
My son is 7. He is on one as well. So
we have
millions of Americans.
Right. 500,000 Wisconsinites have asthma.
Break the bank to breathe.
That's right. And so the companies that make them set the list price.
Yep.
In America, the average list price is between $200 and $650 per inhaler. Now, if you have insurance, they pay for a lot of that. You might have a copay. Mm-hmm. If you're on Medicare or Medicaid, who knows how much your copay is? Yep. If you're uninsured, probably the poorest people we have are the ones who are uninsured or underinsured. Mm-hmm. They pay the most. They pay the bigger part of the list price. In Europe, those same inhalers are listed between $5 and $75.
Yeah.
And so we launched an investigation and we said to the four manufacturers two things. One is, why are you gouging people in the U.S. and setting such lower prices elsewhere, including Europe? And secondly, they're like, why are there only four of you? There's been inhalers since the 50s. Right. Yeah. Have your patents not run out? I mean, there's just no logic why there's not generic competition.
Right.
They're gaming the system. But under scrutiny, when we shined that spotlight on them and launched this investigation in January, by March, three of them had agreed to lower out-of-pocket prices for asthma inhalers to no more than $35 out-of-pocket per month. Two of them implemented that on June 1st. The third one is still futzing around with when they're going to implement that. And the fourth one hasn't agreed to anything. So just talk to your doctors about getting inhalers from the ones that are agreeing. And we didn't pass a law to do that, but we may have to at some point to keep them to their word.
Yeah, and we're talking with Senator Tammy Baldwin here. That was another thing, too, and you know, inhalers. And there was a thing with EpiPens, too. And I have one myself because I'm allergic to peanuts. And there was a time where I would go to the pharmacy and it was $50, and then I go the next time and it's like $200. Like, what happened? You know, it's
so overnight.
Wild.
One of the companies making them doubled it from $100 to $200.
Wild or whatever.
I remember talking to it was on both asthma inhalers and this school nurses, because the schools say your kiddo has an allergy. I want to have an extra emergency one at school.
Exactly. Yeah, we're going to continue this right on the other side, because I do want to get to that here with Senator Tammy Baldwin. We'll be right back.
More from Mark Becker and Senator Tammy Baldwin up next on Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. You've got Mark Becker, and we were talking with Senator Tammy Baldwin on before we were just finishing up a thought that you had about EpiPens. And yes. I am that person that had to have one in my pocket and then one at the school nurses.
Right. So when they doubled them to $200.
Yeah.
And you were sending your kids back to school, and it was right before school started that this happened.
Yep.
And the school nurse would tell mom or dad, okay, you know, I know you have your kiddo carry it around, but they could forget it. They're young.
Yeah.
And so we need an extra one at school. Well, insurance covers your regular one.
Yep.
But it doesn't cover an extra one.
Right.
And I heard from both school nurses and parents who, like, in tears, like, we don't have, we just bought new tennis shoes for the kid. Yeah. We don't have an extra $200 laying around to do this. And it shouldn't be that way.
Right. Right. And that kind of brings me to, you know, your race.
Yes.
And it's so critically important in a number of different ways. I think, you know, we talked last segment about the, you know, uncertainty at the top of the ticket. A lot of times that top of the ticket is the tide that raises all ships. And that's probably going to be you. You know, you are loved by a lot of people here in Wisconsin. And I think how you do, how goes Tammy Baldwin, so goes Wisconsin. I really believe that is what's going to happen here in November. And I think, you know, from my experience with your opponent, Mr. Eric Hovde, I knew him. And I knew him when he was rejected by Republicans in his primary to take on you in 2012. And he's back. And he reminds me of a villain in the cartoons where you slap on a mustache and he's a different guy, you know? And so here we have the same old Eric Hovde, just with a mustache. But the difference between you and him could not be more stark.
That's true. That's true.
You know, his website, he talks about things like the border crisis. He talks about foreign policy, which is really funny. that in that segment, he has the same video posted like 5 times in a row. It's very funny. But, you know, and not to mention he talks about Ukraine and the only thing he talks about is how much money it has cost us. Talk about the difference between you two.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with the border, because I'm sure that's one he wants to lead with. We spent several months at the early part of this year engaged in a bipartisan negotiation to bring order to the southern border. And our focus was hiring tens of thousands of new border security guards, reforming the asylum process. You know, right now, people who are seeking asylum may wait 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years to get their case.
Yeah.
Let's make that many months.
Right.
Or even weeks.
Right.
We can do that. And this bill aimed to do that. The fentanyl that's coming in over the border, we need better detection devices. The technology is available. If you fly, you put your suitcase through a detector. It looks inside. We don't have that for the vehicles that are coming in. The technology is available. It's expensive. We have to make the commitment.
Would make sense.
It absolutely makes sense. That bill was negotiated with probably one of the most conservative Republicans on the southern border issues. And right when we brought it up for a vote, former President Trump basically said, I want to run on the chaos.
We can't give them a win.
We can't give them a win. We are ready to take action. And politics got in the way. And politics that my opponent embraced. But then let's get to some other issues. I helped write the Affordable Care Act when I was in the House of Representatives. Remember I told you about my grandparents not being able to find me insurance? We wrote a provision that said insurance companies can no longer discriminate against people because they have a pre-existing condition.
That's cool. Yep.
My amendment was the one that allows young people to stay on their parents' health insurance until they turn 26.
Nice touch.
Yes. It was amazing. It was an amazing breakthrough because that was the age group that
was huge.
Most uninsured.
Yep.
So
that saved a lot of lives, I believe. I really believe that.
My opponent wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act in its entirety. Yep. And just a couple weeks ago was caught on a hot mic saying specifically that he wanted to repeal my provision on insuring young people.
Nice.
He said young people need to grow up and this like postpones their finding maturity or something. It's like, be real. Yeah. If you have a child with a pre-existing condition who's turning 18, 19, boy, they need to be able to be on their parents' health insurance until they have a job that provides health insurance. Because in the individual market back then, they'd never find it at any price.
They're in trouble. Yeah.
Right? So my opponent said in his last race for U.S. Senate in 2012 that he was 100% opposed to abortion rights.
Mm-hmm.
And he celebrated the overturning of Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fighting to restore those rights. He would support a national ban. Okay, so let's talk about, I mean, we are, we have different values.
Yeah.
I'm fighting for the working people of this state, and he's fighting for the powerful and the wealthy. I don't think I mentioned that he is a multimillionaire who's self-financing his campaign with, you know, tenuous ties to the state these days because he owns a $3 billion California bank.
Yeah.
But aside from that, it's a nice job when you can have it, right?
It's a good gig.
Good gig. Uh-huh.
Yeah. We're talking with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. And I think, you know, I guess the big fights that you have about the cost of raising a family, you know, women's rights, affordable health care, the fentanyl epidemic, voting rights.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Like that. What we talk about the assault on people's very fundamental right to have a voice in this country.
Yes.
That's under scrutiny from him and the people that he associates with. Talk about that.
Well, here's a great example. In early April, former President Trump flew to Green Bay and held a rally here. Mm-hmm. He brought Eric Hovde, my opponent, on stage and gave him his full-throated endorsement. And then Donald Trump proceeded to say at that rally, by the way, I actually won Wisconsin in 2020.
Yeah.
He was denying
that he was serious.
He was absolutely serious. Yeah. In follow-up upon that endorsement, reporters asked Eric Hovde, my opponent, well, what do you think about the election results in Wisconsin? And he basically, I'm paraphrasing, but said, there's a bunch of funny business. Well, what do you mean? Yeah. Oh, the nursing homes. And he then uttered the quote that he's, you know, he's doubled down on since, that people in nursing homes should not be able to vote. He basically said, if you're in a nursing home, you have 5 or 6 months to live. You're at no point to vote. My grandmother lived to 94. She's remember I told you at the beginning, she's the one who raised me.
Yep.
She broke her hip when she was 90 and needed nursing care.
Yeah.
It was right when I was running for Congress. Mm. She was born before women had the right to vote, and she cast a vote from a nursing home for me to send her granddaughter to the Congress of the United States.
That's probably the most proud vote she ever cast. That's very cool.
And don't pick on our elders.
Yeah. No.
And then you could go into the differences between my opponent and I on Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah. Well,
I'm committed to strengthening them and making sure that they're around for generations to come. And he's for cutting them.
Well, and it's interesting. And people that are my age, I'm a millennial, you know, I look at where things are in terms of childcare and retirement and all of this stuff. Like retirement for me, I'm a business owner. My business is my retirement. But I look at people, you know, God hope we can stay around that long. I don't know how I would retire, you know? And so if Social Security is not there,
right.
That's a tall hill, man.
Absolutely. You know, when we created Social Security all those many years ago, we talked about retirement as a three-legged stool.
Yes.
You have your pension, your savings, and Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've seen the way pension plans work go from defined benefit to defined contribution to many employers that don't offer them. And
it goes hand in hand with unions, you know, assault on unions and all of that stuff. Yep.
And you know, in terms of savings, we had a big recession back in 2007, 2008, a banking crisis, a housing crisis. A lot of people got wiped out.
Yeah, right.
And so we need to make an absolute promise to the people who have paid into Social Security throughout their working lives that it will be there for them. It will be strong for them. We can't go back to where retirement was sentenced to poverty.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a great way to put it, and I didn't think of it that way. But you know, it's something that is so fundamental to who we are. You know, we take care of our own. We take care of the people that took care of us, and that it is our elderly. And it does seem that so often your opponent doesn't really care all that much to do that. So what, you know, and I want to talk about too, what is the path forward for healing in the country?
Yeah.
Because we're a little divided.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have a great message when it comes to that too.
Right. I will say for one thing, I cannot be successful with legislation unless I can overcome a filibuster. And for those who don't follow these things carefully, that means I need 60 votes, which means I need Republican votes. Mm-hmm. And I consider myself somebody who's really good at reaching across the party aisle. What do? I look at my colleagues, my Republican colleagues, think about, you know, what do our states have in common? Reaching out to some of the Indiana senators and Ohio senators when they have, you know, industrial bases like Wisconsin does. Mm. And what can we do to work on manufacturing issues together? Yeah. Or looking at other ag states, other dairy states, teaming up with people that, you know, Chuck Grassley and Tammy Baldwin working on policy together. Of course we do. Yeah, Joni Ernst and Tammy Baldwin. Of course we do. Yeah. Because our states have things in common,
right.
And we all want good things for our constituents. And I think if we can focus more on that, acknowledging the challenges and figuring out paths forward. You know, I try to model the solution to this, you know, in my own way, is by not using these the type of rhetoric that incites violence, but trying to use words matter. How we talk matters.
Right. And, you know, we're talking with Senator Tammy Baldwin. I want to, you know, you talk about rhetoric that incites violence, or as Eric Hovde said, rhetoric that incites violence. I want to hear what was it like on January 6th for you?
It was terrifying and in so many ways predictable. I mean, leading up to that date, and by the way, usually the counting of the electoral ballots is perfunctory.
Right.
Usually, like, nobody bothers coming back for it, right, even, because it just happens. But we had already, you know, been alerted that we might get both a House and a Senate member to object to certain states' electoral count.
And we did, yeah.
And then we heard about the rally. And I mean, we were forewarned. This wasn't secret. We got to hear the ways in which Trump was calling for people to come be ready to fight.
Yeah.
And I remember looking out a window that it was in the Capitol outside the Senate chambers, and looking down. This was shortly after the rally ended at the, you know, close to the White House. And I actually took a picture. I have a picture of just hundreds of people filing towards the Capitol. And then I went in because we were now then they objected to the Arizona count. And then mm-hmm. we went to our separate chambers. Vice President Pence is presiding over the Senate. And I remember sitting there when security took him off the, took him off the presiding chair and put Grassley in there because Republicans were in the majority. And then they realized he's in the chain for the presidency. They pulled him off said, we're in recess. And they said, at first, you're safer in the chamber. And they locked all the doors. And then an officer came in and said, we don't think you're safe here anymore. And they ushered us out. And then we watched everything unfold on television from a safer space in one of the Senate office buildings.
We'll be right back on The Rational Revolution. We're talking with Senator Tammy Baldwin. If you like what you hear, you can find this episode along with all of the other ones on our website at civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to The Rational Revolution with Mark Becker. His guest this week, Senator Tammy Baldwin.
You know, if we end the interview on the note of seriousness, it really is something that we... You know, there's so much to be hopeful
yes.
for and hopeful about. It is a serious thing, and not in a rhetoric of like the country's not going to exist or all of that stuff, but like it really matters.
It really does. There are so many efforts at so many levels to make it harder for people to vote.
Yep.
And we are a government of, by, and for the people. Mm. That is the key piece.
The keystone of our democracy. Yes.
You know, one final thought about a comment you made earlier, which is, you know, sometimes we look in a presidential year from the top of the ticket down.
Yeah.
One thing I've celebrated this year is fair maps.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
And so I think we may have an election
yes.
where it bubbles up from the bottom.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
We have so many people who are stepping up to run because they care about public service.
Yes. It's like the best and the brightest are here.
Right.
What a beautiful thing it is for this state. Oh,
absolutely.
My God.
Absolutely. And so I hope, you know, not only are people watching the ads for the top of the ticket, but they're talking to their neighbors. And you have candidates who really want to serve and make a difference.
Yeah.
And you have conversations door to door.
Yeah.
And that's kind of exciting to
me. What an awesome thing. Senator Tammy Baldwin, I hope you come back. Because we've got so much to talk about,
yes.
and you're more than welcome as the campaign rolls along. Thank you so much for your time. This was a true honor.
Well, thank you, Mark.
Thank you. We'll do it again.
Yes.
All right. Boy, that was cool. It was so great having Senator Tammy Baldwin in studio, nonetheless. My goodness, I think that was the biggest guest we've had in studio since I started doing this, and it's been an honor to come speak with you every week and bring you guests like Tammy Baldwin, who... has such an interesting perspective on the world and on things that are happening. And I wanted to share some thoughts that I've had about things that are happening. you know, the last couple of weeks in politics really has been remarkable. I heard the debate, and we talked a little bit about that, but I didn't share my story. I heard the debate as we were driving to Milwaukee. We were listening to it on the radio, and my goodness, it was just a shocking thing. And, you know, it really kind of, it was all the fears that we had about the top of the ticket personified. It come to fruition. And it was really good to hear what Senator Baldwin's thoughts were about it is his race until it's not. But it was nice to hear her, you know, acknowledge that and hear her perspective on what's going on. Another thing that that has happened has been something that really has shocked the country to the core. You know, this episode is recorded, but at the time that this is played, it was a week ago that, you know, one of the unthinkable things almost came to be. A young Republican armed with a weapon of war that the GOP has fought tooth and nail to both keep legal in its status in the United States, as well as keep its access open to members of the general public. A gentleman took that weapon, aimed it at the former president of the United States, and was able to pull the trigger. We are grateful and, you know, thankful that it did miss, but it didn't miss, tragically, a father that was leaning over his family to protect them and shield them from the bullets. And, you know, it's something that is horrific, period. But I think since the fallout that has happened from that has been really a wide range of things. To his immeasurable credit, President Biden pulled all of his advertising, called President Trump, and you know, talked about what was going on and you know, offered his condolences and sympathies and all of that. It's great. And, you know, representatives and elected officials on both sides of the aisle wanted, you know, everything to come down, the tone, the rhetoric, or as Eric Hovde said, the rhetoric, as he said that night. He wants the temperature to go down. And I think, you know, since it happened, one of the things that has happened since all of the calls for unity and turn the temperature down, since that has happened, it's almost, you know, it's completely insincere and laughable almost that some representatives and some people at the top of the ticket, even on the other side, have called for unity and peace and, you know, all of this, calm the waters. But then right after doing that, they go right back into that message of divisiveness and, you know, of talking about American carnage and violence in the streets and mass deportation, all this stuff. And it's so frustrating because, you know, was it Machiavelli? Never waste a good, never let a good crisis go to waste. And so there, it's the same message of divisiveness and the same message of, you know, of the Democrats are going to ruin the country and all of this stuff, but it's packaged with this little bow in front of it saying, we need to come together. And the point is, it's not we need to come together, period. It's we need to come together, comma, because the Democrats will destroy this country. We need to come together, comma, because there might not be a country to come back to. And that's the message that's really being played at the RNC this week. And it's so frustrating. I was reading an article from Sky News over in England. And they were talking about how Donald Trump is wearing this badge on his ear like it's a badge of courage. You know, he came to the RNC with this big, like, size of a MyPillow, all right, slapped on the side of his head. And here he is mentioning, to, you know, wants it to be so obvious that all of these things happen. And use that as a tool to further the rhetoric and further the divide. And so it's so frustrating because something such, you know, so unspeakable came to be. Something so horrific happened in such a public way. And even from that horrific thing, they still can't help themselves but use that to divide. And I loved hearing Tammy Baldwin's message of coming together and being that voice that calms the waters, that voice of reason. So thank you all so very much for listening. Thank you for tuning in. And we'll see you next week here on The Rational Revolution.
Waiting for a train when I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and wrote a song.